This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's access media station, Plains FM, and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Breaking Ground, a new podcast about earth-moving machinery and characters in the industry. If you're in the earth-moving industry, a machine owner, a classic machinery lover, or anyone interested in this side of New Zealand life, then this is a show for you. Both your hosts work for TerraCat, New Zealand's Caterpillar machinery dealer. I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Marty Turek. In this podcast, we'll hear stories from a wide range of characters in the industry. We thought we'd start today with someone we both know really well. Steve Templer. Welcome, Steve.
G'day, guys. How are we?
Good. So, Steve. Steve started with Gough, Gough & Hammer in 1974 in their Hamilton branch. Worked with them in three different North Island branches. Left for a short time, then returned as a Caterpillar sales manager to head office down here in Christchurch, where he worked for another 35 years in a variety of senior roles. So Steve, you've worked in New Zealand's Caterpillar dealer since 1974, so more than 40 years. Take us back there. How did it all start? And what kept you there, and sort of why, and how did you get to this?
Good questions, I guess, Marty. Well, I was born on a farm, and I was always interested, like a lot of young boys, in heavy machinery, particularly things like bulldozers and so on. I'd been working for my parents for a wee while when I saw a job at Gough, Gough & Hamer, as they were in those days advertised, as a storeman in their Hamilton branch. It was close to where we lived, so that worked for me. So I applied for it and got it. It was a small branch, great team of people, and everyone got on well. Neat team spirit, and they were a pretty focused little group, very focused on the customers, and generally had good relationships with those customers. What kept me there? I guess my passion for the Caterpillar product and the industry, in fact. Also, the company offered great opportunities within, particularly if you're prepared to move around the country, which I was. So as you mentioned, I worked in three different North Island branches, and I was away for a while and then moved down to the head office and into a variety of roles. So, yeah, pretty neat career.
Steve, do you want to tell us about some of those roles that you have done over that time that you're at the dealer?
Yeah, and I guess my career would not be unlike many guys in the organisation and girls who've gone on to be senior managers. In fact, the people at the top of the organisation, TerraCat as it is, would be good examples of that, where you started at the bottom and worked your way up. In my case, I started in the parts store. I went on to become a parts supervisor. I then went on to become a parts and service sales rep, PSSR as we called them back then. Then I moved into a role as a machine sales rep selling Caterpillar machines. I had a spell away from the organisation and came back as the sales manager for Caterpillar in head office, and during that time in head office I worked as the product support manager, as the marketing manager, latterly as training manager and then national accounts manager. So a real mixture of roles and locations around the country.
Well, it sounds like you've met definitely a lot of characters, I can imagine, in that sort of journey as you've gone through. So who are some of those sort of memorable characters or that have stood out with you over the years?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, Marty, and they probably fall into three groups. Your workmates, the customers, and the Caterpillar support staff, who, as you guys would know, we have a lot to do with, and there's some fine people in that organisation. And it's really hard with 45 years to single out individuals. People do make an impression on you. My first CEO I worked for, Jim Sheed, in fact, made a big impression on me, and also my first branch manager I worked for. Those guys taught me some lessons, and likewise I worked with some wonderful people in sales. We had many memorable occasions, both on and off the track, if you like to call it that, and as we did with the Caterpillar guys, and as you guys know, built some fantastic relationships with customers around the country, and you know, got to know them. You made a lot of lifelong friends, you know. So yeah, shared lots of great times and experiences.
So talking about those experiences, Steve, have you had a favourite project or maybe a career highlight over those years?
Yeah, that's, you know, in 45 years, there's lots of highlights, I suppose.
Anything that stands out, maybe?
Yeah, I guess there's a couple of things. Early in my career, in the mid to late 80s, we won a contract to supply the New Zealand Army with a lot of equipment. And that was quite a big project for those days. And it was it meant we built a very close relationship with the Army. And that was an awful lot of fun and lots of fond memories of delivering and training those guys. And that stood out a wee bit. The other thing I probably have a strong personal attachment would be the logging industry. I made it a bit of a... I guess it was a target of mine personally to, as the industry moved towards higher mechanisation, to really push our products hard with the help of the Caterpillar factory people and a wonderful team of reps. So we built great relationships with the logging contractors. You know, good people to deal with, and that industry and our inroads into that industry were probably one of the highlights of my time working for the dealership.
So, Steve, you sort of touched on a couple of industries there as far as sort of both the Army and also the logging industry. Is there a favourite machine or product that you've sold as you've gone through?
Well, you know, Marty, as a mechanic, there's probably some machines that aren't favourites.
Yeah.
You know, that's an interesting question. Every machine you win from the competitor is a favourite, be they big and small, and it's easy to get hung up on big machines like mining trucks and so on and so forth like that. We all get emotional about that. Having said that, I suppose individual things that stick out, when we sold our first two D11s in New Zealand, they were big tractors, they were the biggest tractors in the world in those days, and As the national sales manager, I dealt with the customers direct because the customers that bought the first two were large customers, and I sold them both in the same week, in fact, to two different customers. And I wouldn't say the D11 was my favourite machine, but it was a very memorable week because we picked over two very big machines, and they were the first ones we'd ever sold, and they were pretty neat tractors to deliver. So that has memories, but they're all good.
Steve, you talked about forestry and mechanisation was obviously a big change in terms of you coming on board as sales manager. That might lead into, I suppose it leads into the next question in terms of the biggest change that you've seen over your time within the dealership. What would that probably be?
That's a good question, Richard. There's been an enormous amount of change. The dealership's been around for about 95 years, and if you stop and think for a bit, I work for it for half its existence, so I've seen a huge amount of change. And the two things, there's probably two things. One is the development in the product and the technology and tech and the electronics, onboard electronics in the Caterpillar product is vastly different from when I first started with the company. The other one that really affects most people in the organisation, the industry, is the major moves forward in health and safety. So if you stop and think for a minute, when I started with this organisation, as a young field rep particularly, high-vis clothing hadn't been invented. Kevlar safety trousers for the logging guys hadn't been invented. the likes of safety glasses and gloves and earmuffs. Nobody wore those unless you were in something like a steel mill. I climbed on and off machines and loaded and unloaded machines wearing a tie and a jacket and sometimes a suit and leather-soled shoes. So by today's standards, utterly not the right stuff to be wearing. We went through the forests in two-wheel drive vehicles. There was no driving protocols, no RTs, no cell phones, no driving protocols with logging trucks. The object was to miss the oncoming logging trucks. As long as you did that, you were okay. So if you compare that with today's, where everyone in the organisation has PPE, particularly our service guys, they've got very high quality tooling, excellent safety equipment when it comes, you know, the likes of gloves, and when it comes to jacking and blocking and lifting heavy loads and working underneath heavy supported machines, the old days of slippery wooden blocks have long gone. I mean, it's an extremely dangerous area, and it's a huge area of risk or even death for those boys. So there's been enormous progress in that area, in all industries, but it affects everyone in our industry. That's probably singly the biggest thing that I would notice.
I suppose, Steve, as well, it's also probably been exponential too, as it started out coming in slowly and it's just got quicker and quicker. Definitely technology and stuff, as you say, and safety as well, it's sort of changing a lot quicker too.
Yeah, and there's no doubt it makes for a better and more efficient working environment. You know that you know where the tooling is, you know what to use, the guys communicate well, they organise themselves well. And it certainly makes a safer environment. We don't even think about it these days. And we didn't think about it in my day either. But, you know, a tie flapping around the breeze can get tangled in steering levers pretty easily.
Very much so, very much so. I suppose 40 years in your career and stuff like that, one of the big questions is what sort of motivated you? What made you get out of bed each morning and come into work with some of the stuff that you did?
Making money to pay a mortgage. We pay pretty good interest rates in those days. That's an interesting question. I guess it comes back to my passion for the industry. And, you know, companies change. This is always a private company. And I loved being part of a team. And I loved being part of the industry. And I had a great passion for the product. And I liked winning. To me, a lot of it was about winning. So you got up and came to work. Hence, the largest portion of my career was in sales and marketing, because it was about winning the business. And I guess that was a huge motivator for me. And being part of a team. And that stuff still exists today.
And Steve, I suppose being part of a team and winning's, you know, that's the good stuff. What about, I suppose, from your perspective, have you got an example of maybe a mistake or failure that you experienced? Could have been with a machine or something other that. And what did you learn from that?
We don't make mistakes, do we, Rich?
Of course we don't.
Yeah, I do. I've made a lot of mistakes over the years, and probably because of just inexperience and immaturity as a young guy, made some not so smart decisions. But I guess one one incident sticks in my mind very clearly, and in fact it's as clear as yesterday, and it was a safety near miss I had. And in fact I was a PSSR at the time, and I was north of Auckland and out the back of Wellsford going to do a track measurement on a customer's bulldozer, a D4E. And the tractor, the customer rang me to say they'd been rained off, and the track told me where I could find the tractor. It was on the back of a big farm out towards the coast from Wellsford. So I was working in that area, and it was bad weather. And I went out to the tractor, drove for miles to the back of this farm, did the track report. I climbed up on the tractor, and I was sitting in the seat under the canopy out of the drizzling rain, filling out the paperwork, and I stepped out onto the fender of the tractor, and I was wearing gumboots, which are wet, and I slipped off. And as you guys would know, I, I slipped down the side of the tractor, bounced off the tracks. My base of my back hit the tracks and bounced off that, bounced off the blade and landed in a sort of a semi-lying sitting position beside the bulldozer. And the pain was so intense, I was too scared to move. I thought I'd broken my back and for a minute, and I just sat there with my eyes watering and eventually plucked up the courage to move my legs or try and move my legs, which were moving. Which I got up, and ironically, other than some really deep bruising at the bottom of my spine, I was okay. But thinking back about that incident, nobody knew where I was. I had no cell phone, no... the customer didn't know when I was calling on the tractor. The branch and my wife knew I was working somewhere in the North Auckland area covering customers. I had no RT. I don't know if the farmer had seen me go on the property or whatever. So I could have, if I'd incapacitated myself, could have lain there for several days, could have died of exposure. And it taught me a valuable lesson that there's a right way and a wrong way of getting on and off machines. And I've, ever since then, I've said to the young guys, particularly the apprentices, you only get one chance to do this right. And if you're going to hurt yourself, that's when you'll do it. And ever since that incident, even climbing ladders, I've been very careful ever since then. So that was probably my narrowest, one of my dangerous mistakes.
I'm sure those young fellas have all taken that, I suppose, that story and that experience on board, Steve.
Well, I hope so.
I definitely remember you explaining that one to me when I first started, so I definitely took it on board. I suppose, Steve, the industry, it's quite a broad industry and that we sort of operate in and that sort of thing. You've touched on a range of different areas. What do you think is one of the biggest misunderstanding that people have about our industry that we work in?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's a hard question to answer. I don't know what they think because I'm not the general public looking from the outside. But if I was to guess, one of the sad things, I suppose, to me, I suspect that many people look at this industry as a, if this is the right word, a low level industry, if that's the right wording to use. And many parents would probably not want their children to embark on a career in earth moving or construction or the logging industries because they deem they are sort of cowboys and they've got little regard for the environment. When in fact, you know, they build some fantastic civil construction projects in this place, for example, in this country. The mining industry has a bad name, but we have to have a mining industry, like it or not, and it's got a bad reputation. But far be it from being a low-level industry, it's got some very smart and very successful people in it, and it's a wonderful industry, and it's got enormous career opportunity. And I think far from being knocking the environment around, most of our loggers would be good examples. They log with huge regard for solids in the waterways and runoff nowadays. They're under tight constraints. And pine trees in this country are just a renewable crop. So I think they're very environmentally focused and very successful. So it's not by no means is it an industry for dummies. Yeah.
And it's only going to keep progressing from there as well as we sort of get greater exposure, hopefully, out as far as the industry and new technologies, like you say, come in and new standards come in and stuff like that should help sort of carry on that stretch, hopefully.
Well, that's dead right. And autonomous mining would be a really good example of that, you know.
Steve, you said, you know, once upon a time you were a young fella. So, you know, if you were going to be, I suppose, giving some advice to your 18-year-old self, way back in the day, what would it be?
If I was to put it in words of one syllable, you know, get up early, work hard, listen to people's advice, and try and learn from it. You learn listening to things, and this is not the army, so don't be scared of putting your hand up, volunteering for things. The more things you volunteer, the more things you take on, the more opportunities will come your way. And I well remember an old logger, and you guys both know this gentleman. I remember him saying to me once, if you can get a young person to stand on the footpath outside their house at 4 o'clock in the morning rain or shine, when my crew bus comes past to pick them up, boys up to go up to the bush, I will make a successful logger out of that person. And I saw him do that with a number of young guys and girls. So attitude is everything. You know, that would be my view of that.
Yeah, it's certainly some good advice, isn't it?
Yeah, very much so. So Steve, we're sort of coming towards the end of it now, or the session today. So is there anything that you feel like we've missed or that you just wanted to talk about as far as the industry and that sort of thing?
Oh, no, I look back now with very fond memories, and I still believe it's an industry with huge opportunity, great opportunity for girls, a lot of young women engineers out there now in construction. And I think it's going. We'll be in this industry for as long as we're on this planet, and I'll always have fond memories of it. You know, it's a huge, it's a great vocation. Recommend it to anyone.
Well, thank you very much, Steve. We really appreciate your time, and thanks for coming on today's Breaking Ground podcast. And thanks so much to our listeners. We hope you've enjoyed it. We'd love your feedback. Send us a message on any of our TerraCat social media channels. And please keep an eye on our TerraCat Facebook page for next month's show.